Hey, y'all, it's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Welcome back to another edition of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. I'm your host, Dr. Samina Rahman, and I'm super excited today to have a co-host with me, Karen Bradley. I'm going to let her introduce herself in a second, but before I do, just a reminder, I am a sex med gynecologist in downtown Chicago, specializing in sexual medicine and menopause management, and have my own practice called the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collector, which we're going to talk about. And I'm the issuest chair for the scientific committee, so I'm looking forward to that meeting in the spring. And please like and subscribe to this podcast and my Gyno Girl TV channel. All right, yay. Okay, so today we are in our office, actually, and I have my whole team for the GSM Collective. And we want to talk to you guys about the pelvic floor. And so I'm going to let Grace and Karen introduce themselves, who have been on my team for a very long time, and I'm so grateful to have them as part of my team. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about our practice, and then we're going to talk about the pelvic floor. So Karen, you can start.
Yes. So I'm Karen Bradley. I'm a board certified family nurse practitioner, and I've been with Dr. Rahman, I feel like, maybe for the past six or seven years.
No, I was
or so.
Pregnant, I think, when you started.
Okay. Yeah. Pregnant. Yeah. You were pregnant.
So my kid's 6 years old. So seven years.
So 7 years. And I also work in aesthetics. Yes, I have my own aesthetic practice called KB Aesthetics, and I kind of incorporate the two within our gynecology practice and the aesthetics.
Yes, yes. Amazing. And then Grace Preet is my wonderful pelvic floor PT, and so I'll let her introduce herself.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Grace. I'm a doctor at a physical therapy. I've been practicing now for about 5 years, and with Dr. Rahman, Karen here for 3 years, I believe, at this point. Yeah, I graduated from, is it 3 years? Yeah, I think
maybe
about.
Well, no, maybe.
Yeah.
You've only been in this location, right? You weren't at the Jackson.
Right. Yeah. So I think I started shortly after you guys started here at this practice here. But I received my doctorate of physical therapy in Wisconsin at Carroll University. And So I started in this kind of route of physical therapy pretty young. I was 16 when I started as a tech, as soon as I could start working. Fortunately, I have a lot of medical providers in my family. My dad's a physician. He had a physical therapist in his office, and he kind of guided me and suggested that I try this route because you know, I was really active and an athlete and had my own injuries already at that age and had seen physical therapists and really enjoyed it. And that point, I really thought that I was going to go into orthopedics. So, you know, all my internships in grad school were in orthopedics, except one of them that really influenced me was at University of Chicago. And I had really found a passion for treating people with chronic pain and found a passion for treating the full kind of body emotionally and physically. And so I kind of went that route and was, you know, after I graduated, I started an outpatient orthopedic practice until Dr. Rahman saved me. She actually sent me a text message because I had my phone number on my LinkedIn resume. And it just kind of...
I need you to work.
Yeah, it just is a perfect description of how Dr. Rahman is, just very direct and personable. And it was just a personal phone call. You know, she didn't hire anyone to talk to me. And it was I wasn't considering really changing jobs until we kind of discussed further about the position and, you know, we'll kind of talk about why I love working here and what we offer patients here. But yeah, so chronic pain, a lot of what we treat here is pelvic pain. And, you know, dyspareunia, vaginismus, vulvodynia.
PGAD,
you know, things like that. And, you know, I found a passion in treating, as I said, conditions that involve emotional stress. And a lot of those conditions are stressful, whether it's the stress that's caused it or this condition has caused more stress. It can become a cycle. But I really love seeing the patients we see here. A lot of them have seen many providers before finding us and have already been gaslit by the medical field and have felt really, lost hope and had no idea what was going on, weren't really educated on what their condition is, hadn't really tried any, of the newer services and interventions that we provide in this office. And so I really like to kind of bring uplift patients and, you know, show them that there is a solution and, you know, you have people on your team that really care about you and that there's hope and, you know, it's a journey and it'll take time, but, you know, there is an outlet.
And I have to say the patients really love you. I mean, they always say that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Grace is such a, you know, healer and everything. So it's very important, I think, for a practice that treats midlife women and that treats any type of sexual dysfunction to really work very closely on the team with a pelvic floor physical therapist. It's essential, actually. And because we're lucky enough to have Grace who does orthopedics as well. And we know we've talked about the spine a lot on this podcast. And we know how much the spine and its impact can have on sexual function as well. And the hips, we can talk a little bit about that. But I have to say that, you know, having someone to work directly with me and Karen as a team, we've really built something strong here. And I think that the icing on the cake has always been if I could get a sex therapist in the office, which I've tried since before the pandemic. But now, you know, after the pandemic hit, it was really hard to recruit sex therapists to be in office, but at least we know enough sex therapists in Chicago to really provide that biopsychosocial model of care for the patients and they need them. And so, although if there's any sex therapists that are listening and they want to even just come, you know, to the office once a month and, you know, even rent space, you know, just so that we have like a full team approach. Because what I love is that I can just walk down the hall and say, hey, Grace, like, how's, you know, so-and-so doing? And I know, do you think that we should do trigger points? Do you think that we should do Botox? Where are you? Do you think it's like at a point where you kind of maxed out, you know, biofeedback, whatever, you know? And so I love that because prior to that, we would always have to like, you know, email therapists across Chicago and try to talk to them. And it just provides a different level of care when you can actually directly communicate with the care team involved. And I think because we share this office with the interventional pain practice, when we have additional issues that come up, you know, okay, looks like they're, you know, Grace say, you know what, she has bad hip mobility, or I do think that she's developing a radiculopathy. Maybe they need to see the pain practice, and then we can do it all under one office. And at the same time, you know what, you need Botox for the vagina, I'll take care of it. You need Botox for the face, Karen's got you. So we try to cover all the grounds that we can here. And, you know, we did it for a long time under an insurance-based model. And and before we talk deep into pelvic floor, I just want to talk about, you know, why it is that we decided to kind of remove the obstacle of insurance. And I have to say that it became harder and harder to practice medicine with using insurance because the number of patients that we would have to see would have to actually double. And also the three of us are empaths, and we always talk about this. Like, we go home after hearing how much our patients have experienced through their journey. And, like, you know, I would just, you know, even if I was only seeing what 12 or 13 patients that day, which is still not as many as like an academic practice would see. Like, when I was in academics, I saw 30 patients a day. And I'd come home completely drained because, you know, I was seeing under my insurance based model, I was seeing at least, you know, 3 to 4 new patients a day.
Yeah.
And each story would just drain my soul a little bit because I felt like, my God, our medical system is so broken. And I would spend the time with it. I know Karen spends the time with it. I know Grace has spent, you know, her hour with the patients, even though, you know, technically we should, you know, try to keep it to the 30 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever. But because we like to hear our patients and listen to our patients, we didn't want to. We just took it on and suffered in the process because
let you continue.
Yeah. And just listen to the whole story because at the end of the day, like, you know, I used to come home very depleted. I know Karen said the same. Grace has said the same. Yeah. And it's kind of like, well, at some point and you know, for me, I started having perimenopausal symptoms on top of that. And I was like, oh, I gotta do something for my own, you know, I gotta put my own oxygen mask on right now. So at this point, you know, we just realized in order to practice the best medicine, we had to remove insurance from our obstacle. Like, and they couldn't tell us that, guess what? You just wrote down an F code because like persistent genital arousal is a psychiatric code according to ICD-10. And so if that's the case, you know, insurance isn't going to cover it. Or your low libido is hypoactive sexual desire disorder, which is F52. And guess what? Our insurance is not going to cover it because it's an F code. So, you know, these are the things that, you know, we would come up with over and over again. And now we've downsized our practice to a point where I think we're much comfortable getting texts from our patients, responding to them, you know, trying to get them to the appointments they need. And just being, you know, collaborative about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have a much better base now. I feel like our patients are even more connected to us than before. Just because we have more time to devote to each individual person.
Right.
And they can feel that as well. And I feel like they appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, oh, how's your puppy? You know, like, how's your, oh, you're applying, to, you're, I remember your kid's applying to college, you know, how's that going? And so it's, even to that depth of understanding that this is a partnership that we're trying to get our patients to living their not only longest life, but their best life. And so that really does take precision medicine and really nuanced individualized care.
Absolutely. And I've noticed lately, now that we've gone concierge, there's time for us to co-treat sometimes. Like Karen had a patient that came in with some concern for prolapse, and you know, Karen had me come in with her and we got, I got to check her pelvic floor. You know, Karen looked for the prolapse. She felt cervix. You know, she had the speculum. I did the pelvic exam, typically speculum for pelvic floor. And it's given more time for time to think about the treatment options outside of the visit with the patient as well. And to have more time to talk about the patients, you know, like in passing, we have a couple of minutes now to discuss, you know, okay, like what is the next step here? What,
this device, can we get that device?
No, I agree. I feel like previously we would have never had the time to do like a co-exam between
what first one covered either.
That's true.
Like you can't have two different providers that are treating two different areas get covered on the same day. So even when Grace and I, or you and Grace, would have patients that were seeing one of us for the more medical side or whatever was medical, but you know, one clinical side and one pelvic floor side, and the patient would be like, oh, I wish I could see Grace today. And I'm like, I'm sorry, your insurance won't cover it if you see both of us on the same. And so, you know, again, these were the obstacles that we are working without them now, which is great.
And I feel like it also caters to the busy woman. You know, sometimes you need to get everything that you can when you've taken the day off or you hired a sitter or something, whatever it is, utilizing the time the best possible, like being able to see multiple providers in one day is very beneficial.
Like when we have patients flying to see us, right? It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to be there for 3 hours, you know, in the clinic. And so, and if she thinks I need to see the pain doctors, and you know, they'll add me on to that. So, you know, it's something that is very easily that we can do, and it's been very rewarding so far. Two months in, right? So we're very happy, and I think the patients are as well. But it's like starting over, which is always a little bit, you know, scary, because you know starting over from scratch is always hard. But
I think we're doing well.
Yeah, and we're thankful to Ms. Medicine, you know, helping us create and manage the parts that we didn't want to do. So that's really good. And they have like over 30 concierge doctors across the country. And we are their first gynecology-based practice. But, you know, Ms. Medicine, the collaborative is very awesome. And we can talk to other doctors from other states and say like, oh, you know, how are you managing this? How are you managing this? So it becomes really a collaborative network.
Yeah, it's a great network. Very supportive.
Absolutely. Anyway, so that's, we just wanted, since we're all three on, we wanted to give you guys a spiel about what was happening with our practice. But today we wanted to kind of focus in on some of the basics around pelvic floor PT. Grace already kind of reviewed her background with her and why she was so passionate about, you know, joining this collaborative as well. But I think, you know, what do you think, Grace? Let's talk about, because, you know, patients are like, well, what is pelvic floor PT? And like, they get kind of anxious about it. We already have patients whose anxiety is usually a little bit higher because, again, if you've been dismissed by the medical system, not only because, you know, the system is set up to dismiss you, you know, the system's set up for you to get a 10-minute visit, which is not going to be enough for you to get anything answered, but also because, you know, clinicians didn't learn any of it in medical school or residency, or we're trying to do it now. But if someone's been out for the last 15 years, they haven't known, they don't know anything about pelvic floor dysfunction or sexual pain, because we also didn't have all the answers until about 14. Oh, not all of them. We didn't start getting answers until about, 14 years ago for some of this. So walk us through what it looks like when I say, okay, obviously I tell patients, I need you to see Grace, my pelvic floor therapist. She's amazing, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, well, what does that mean? Is she going to like do this? Is she going to do that? And then sometimes I'll just have Grace pop in. Can you just tell them what you're going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I get some common questions walking in straight through the door. You can tell people are pretty anxious walking into pelvic floor PT because they're not sure what it's going to involve. So I think I made a pamphlet, which I'm not sure if we used to use it a while back. We haven't been using it lately because
we have to put our new logo.
The new logo, yeah. But the main questions are like, am I going to have a pelvic exam? Is it going to hurt? And am I going to, take my clothes off? Am I, is it going to damage me? Is it going to take a long time? How much time is this going to need? And the answers to that is, a pelvic exam can be very helpful and it can give us a lot of really great information. But if we are so anxious and so against it, I think it's really important to build trust and rapport. And also, we can do pelvic floor therapy with either just visualizing the vulva and seeing the relaxation and contraction and having patients do kind of treatment themselves. And, especially if there's a lot of fear, kind of palpating muscles internally, using a mirror, learning what the anatomy is, that's a lot that helps with reducing fear. But you can also, you can do a pelvic exam. I try to make it as comfortable as possible. They teach us in pelvic school that you should, lay the patient out on the table in a comfortable position. So if they don't really want to be in that position, that's with their feet up, kind of like in a gynecological exam where they feel a little bit more vulnerable, they can lay with their legs, flat on the table, or they can lay on their side, or, they can be, I usually angle people up a little bit so they can look at me and they can look and see what's happening as well. But yeah, the first visit is 90 minutes now. It used to be 45 minutes to an hour. And I found myself, we were spending 30 minutes talking, which honestly isn't enough for a first visit. And after that, we would do the pelvic exam and the full orthopedic exam. And then we would be rushing through the home exercises. And I would basically just say, okay, this is what's going on. Hopefully I can see you next week. And these are your exercises. I'll email them to you. We don't have time to do any treatment or exercise today. But now I'm able to get a full assessment of, behavioral, habits that might be impacting your pelvic floor, like sitting a lot often at work or very straining to have bowel movements, life factors that are very stressful that might be clenching the pelvic floor, just, just reduced feelings of being in your body or being able to experience pleasure, experience, a mindful awareness of your day-to-day like activities and actually know what you're doing in the moment. Just kind of taking it slow and, going back to the basics of lifestyle habits that can really improve your stress and reduce tension. Because most of the people that come in to any pelvic floor PT place, not just our sexual medicine practice, generally have tension, and that can cause, believe it or not, urinary incontinence and, other pain issues as well. But yeah, we get a full assessment. We talk. We do a full hip, spine, breathing, all the way up to the neck and shoulders, because the spine attaches to your tailbone, which attaches to your pelvic floor. And we look for areas of tension, areas of weakness in the spine and hips, and that can lead to tension or weakness in the pelvic floor because they are so close to each other. We look at the way you breathe, and the way that moves your pelvic floor. And then from that, I create a program individualized to each patient based off of what they really think they can actually do with their time and also what is valuable for them. And we talk about, behavioral things that we can change so that we can, be holistic and take a full, the whole life approach, versus just looking at your pelvic floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the first exam.
And you kind of talked a little bit about how like we're different in terms of like time that you spend. But like from what I remember when I did therapy in the past, like, you know, most appointments were much shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times it was like once you got started with someone, you'd end up working with the pelvic floor or the PT assistant, right?
Right.
Like a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
Happens.
Absolutely.
And so you build rapport with sometimes the therapist, but then, you know, because the therapist has to then see like 20 or 30 patients,
right,
then they have to divide their time up, right?
Bye. Yeah. You're not only seeing multiple providers, you're only seeing them for 20 to 30 minutes. Sometimes some places are double booking you. So you're a pelvic patient in a treatment room and you have a patient outside the door with the aide, and mm-hmm. you're able to see exactly what they're doing. They have specific questions about their condition and that they have to wait to answer. So it's not ideal. You know, pelvic floor therapy, you need time, you need individualized and very one-on-one treatment for it.
Right.
Yeah,
I agree. Because I've even seen a big difference in like the degree and to the extent to which our patients are getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's like directly correlated with the not only the number of visits, but like the extensiveness of the visits that you give, right? Like between, mm-hmm. you know, all three of us working with the patients, I do think that they're tending to get better quicker.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Once they're mentally dead. Oh, let's talk about the new thing that we're doing with some of the patients who have so much anxiety.
Right.
With the pelvic floor that we started incorporating.
With the nitrous oxide. Yeah. With the laughing gas. Oh, it's so wonderful. Yeah. So, you know, Dr. Rahman and Karen are able to use that for different, you know, procedures. I'm with under their mm-hmm. observation. And
quick reality check. If you're listening to this and thinking, why does no one ever talk to me like this in my doctor's office? That's because most doctors aren't trained to, nor do they have the infrastructure for it. That's why I started the GYN and Sexual Medicine Collective, my new concierge practice where sexual wellness, hormone health, and gynecology actually come together like they're supposed to. No 10-minute visits, no gaslighting, no have a glass of wine, relax. Just evidence-based, shame-free care for women who are done settling for bad sex, brain fog, hot flashes, or feeling invisible. I'm proud to be part of the Ms. Medicine Network, which means your care is rooted in science, not stigma. Find us at www.thegsmcollective.com and book the kind of appointment you wish you had had years ago. Your body called. It wants its power back. Let's go.
Supervision, I'm able to use it with patients that are having significant pain with like dilators or pelvic exams, pelvic floor treatment, or can really help ease the nerves and reduce pain. You know, I've used it on the last patient that I used it on was able to progress from like a dilator 3 to a dilator 6 in one session. And we'd plateaued before, you know, starting with the nitrous oxide. So,
I mean, even more effective than when we used to use Xanax or Valium or one of those things.
Absolutely.
Before. They yeah. use this when you come in. If you're the patients with significant vaginismus and vestibulodynia that's from hypertonic floor.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's nice because if you're kind of anxious about taking medication, you know, you just stop inhaling and it goes away in a few minutes. So, you know, we can, within that time, we can try the dilator without, you know, the nitrous afterwards and see if like things have loosened up where we can start, you know, being a little bit more functional or getting closer to what would it look like to have penetrative intercourse at home.
Yeah. I do think that sometimes you're just so wound up about and so anxious about it because most of these patients have been suffering for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them it's been years and they haven't been able to consummate their relationships. Mm-hmm. And so to reduce that anxiety, which is essentially, I think, it works better than most anxiolytics because yeah. it's really trying to dissociate you from what's happening in some ways because you're just so focused on breathing
mm-hmm.
and calm.
Perfectly,
calm,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
Great distraction method.
Distraction method. And it is, you know, they call it laughing gas. Like it, you know, it really lifts your mood and it eliminates anxiety, but also makes you kind of giddy and giggly and
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of can I feel like it can maybe rewire your association with penetration as well, because your body remembers this like euphoric sensation and kind of connects that to, you know, the treatment. And
but yeah, I think that, you know, that's the benefit of us being able to like, again, work together and brainstorm like, okay, maybe this patient has hit a wall. What can we do? Why don't you try the nitrous oxide? You know, this kind of stuff. I think it's been really helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, do you feel as though pelvic floor therapy awareness is growing, like overall with, you know, within the population?
Yeah, I love that question. And, you know, I've been thinking about that the last couple of days. And I think it's a mixture of a lot of different things. I think the awareness is happening because we're learning to advocate more for ourselves because of, you know, social media. And, you know, I think a big part of it is after, you know, childbirth, a lot of people are asking their providers for the service because, yeah, they're seeing it on social media and there's, you know, they're curious about, you know, they're in so much pain. They're like, there's got to be something for this, right? And they're not just accepting that as you know, just the normal anymore. But I think, you know, it's both. There's an increased awareness of it, and but also maybe a little bit increased dysfunction on the other end that's leading to needing more. You know, I'm not sure about this, but, you know, we're a lot more sedentary. You know, obesity rates are increasing, and that can put a lot of pressure on your pelvic floor.
And I always say, like, I tell my patients, like, you know, I feel like if you're not clenching, you're not paying attention to what's happening in the world, because the world's not on fire.
Absolutely.
Like a dumpster fire.
Yeah. How many people are like sitting on that table are like, relax, and then they don't. And then I teach them how to relax and they're like, oh my God, that feels so different. I don't think I've ever done that before.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a huge.
And again, that's trauma informed. That's a safe space for, you know, we create these environments for our patients because, again, most of them have been traumatized and stuff. Not just, I'm not talking sexual, I'm talking like by the medical system or, you know, whatever.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, we also know people that have adverse childhood experiences tend to have higher rates of, you know, sexual dysfunction and pelvic floor dysfunction too. So,
yeah. I'm blanking on the procedure, but there's a, for children with frequent UTIs, there was a procedure that used to be done on children that was painful and has led to research that has indicated that it, you know, it caused lifetime trauma. And I had a patient a couple weeks ago that had that procedure and didn't tell me about it. We went to go do the exam and then I noticed.
Sounds like urethral dilation. I think some people were getting urethra dilated or something. Yeah. I think that patient was telling me that she had her urethral dilated.
Yeah. And so, you know, in that moment, that was a moment of, you know, taking a step back, you know, like coming on the side, speaking to that person and, you know, allowing them to calm down. And, you know, what can we do to make sure that, you know, this is a comfortable, a more comfortable, you know, treatment for you. So we were able to talk through, you know, she's like, put your hand on my hand. And then I put my hand on, and then I was working with the other hand. And then she was able to, you know, she was laughing and calm and relaxed, but there is a strong connection. You know, the body keeps a score with those things. So you don't even know it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we talked a little bit about sort of like postpartum. I mean, I think that's what most people think of when they think of pelvic floor PT is like, okay, I have to Kegel, like to Kegel or not to Kegel. But we've all talked about how sometimes Kegels are not the answer. Maybe you're doing it wrong. So can we address that?
Yeah. You know, I think there's different opinions on whether you should Kegel or not. The general consensus is if you have tension, you should avoid Kegeling. And if you have weakness, you should do more Kegels. But, you know, I think neurologically, it's a little bit more complicated than that. Some patients don't even know they're doing a Kegel. They're living in a Kegel unless I tell them to do Kegel. And then they do Kegel. And then they're like, oh, and then it relaxes afterwards. So I think there's value in awareness and learning awareness in doing contractions if it helps you relax those muscles. And it also can bring blood flow to the area too, because a weak, you know, a tight pelvic floor is also a weak pelvic floor. So typically we're trying to downtrain the nervous system, relax the pelvic floor. And then once we're able to relax the pelvic floor, then we can start doing more contracting and strengthening.
So can you also talk about like the different stages of life when pelvic floor therapy could be beneficial, or conditions that would really benefit from pelvic floor therapy?
You know, throughout, of course, yes. I'm so excited about that answer. I'm just going right into it, or that question. But, it starts in pediatrics. Kids are constipated. Kids are overfilling their bladder because they're distracted and they're not going to the bathroom to pee. And then they get distension. They get UTIs. And there's pelvic floor PTs that treat children. I am not one of those. But, that is a great option for children.
They probably don't do much internal work, though.
They are able to if they've seen a provider that has already done internal work with them.
Well, okay.
I would never do it myself. Hearing all the trauma, would try to work around that as much as possible. But
I think they'd have to just kind of retrain some habits more than anything else.
I think you're right. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But just so people are even aware of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of like athletes too, right? Like student athletes that are doing things that are like probably not great. Like maybe they're overworking their core or, you know, and at the same time. So you're totally right. Like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Athletes, you know, are at risk, you know, power lifters for prolapse. Anything that tenses up the muscles in your pelvic area can also tense up your pelvic floor. You know, straining, anything that strains can put pressure on your pelvic floor. But yeah, athletes are a big contender, especially, you know, not only, you know, also when they become pregnant, it's a lot of pressure on, and some of these mothers are also weightlifting. And so just learning how to brace your pelvic floor, which is a really sheathed layer of muscles that's supposed to support in all that weight, learning how to do that with your breath is really important. So there's a lot of different conditions, you know.
And that's why you say, like, it's not just vaginal deliveries that ruin your pelvic floor. Yeah. It's just pregnancy in general.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, pregnancy alone, you know.
So even that about C-sections.
Correct.
Yeah. C-sections can cause pelvic pain. Absolutely. It tenses your pelvic floor up. When you Kegel, if you do a Kegel right now, you should feel your abdominals, the deep core, the TA activating gently with it. So if you're cutting through that muscle, you're going to impact the ability to do a strong pelvic floor contraction too. So there's a lot of research that supports that. But yeah, things to look out for in your teens, you know, hormonal birth control can cause vulvodynia, hormonally mediated pain at the entrance of the vagina, which has lasting effects. You know, once you go off of it, sometimes you need treatment, a medical treatment, hormone creams that, you know, Dr. Amon has taught me about all of this great stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, pelvic floor tension, once people are starting to engage in intercourse, they might notice, oh, this is painful. And a myth is, you know, a lot of people say the first time should hurt. It's expected to hurt, but it's not normal. It's common, but it's not normal for your first, penetrative intercourse to be painful. So that's a sign. And that's also if you're told that it's supposed to be painful, you anticipate pain, you clench in it, and it's likely to be painful.
Mm-hmm.
So that continues on as, you know, we have this already expectation for pain before even starting, and then it doesn't go away. So pain with sex is a big one. Pain with gynae exams, tampon insertion, pain with underwear touching the area or even sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Tailbone pain, you know, from sitting at school.
And then, of course, once women enter the midlife and they get the genitourinary syndrome or menopause, the pelvic floor is so heavily involved with that, right? With that lack of blood flow in the vagina. And
I've seen the hormone therapy can help with urinary urgency, with just urinary continence, of course, with sexual pain and lubrication, you know, the robustness of those tissues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like for most of our patients that have GSM, they do start with, you know, local hormone therapy, but a lot of them will ultimately seek grace because they've been in pain for so long. And so they clench now and they have vaginismus because they have this involuntary guarding because they know it's going to hurt because their vestibule is on fire. Mm-hmm. And so even after it looks better, they're still not convinced. And so a lot of times grace has to really reteach them and work with them, right?
Absolutely. And there's kind of like many phases. It starts with relearning the pelvic floor shouldn't be painful, eliminating pain, improving the flexibility of the tissue, and then improving the strength. And then, you know, a lot of these people are not having orgasms. They're having reduced libido, reduced desire. And sometimes strengthening the core and those muscles surrounding the pelvic floor as well as the pelvic floor can help with blood flow, lubrication, awareness, and essentially improving those sexual functions.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because obviously if someone has a high toned pelvis and they're clenched up all the time, mm-hmm. and your muscles are supposed to contract and relax during orgasm, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's that release of that contraction never happens. Mm-hmm. And so they have orgasm dysfunction as a result. So that's the other thing people don't realize is that, you know, yeah, clitoral stimulation is where it starts. But for, you know, with that whole contraction, relaxation has to be evaluated. The pelvic floor has to be involved in that assessment and really trying to fix the orgasm dysfunction.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think not only the relaxation portion, but some patients also describe a feeling of like a Charlie horse or like a pain with orgasm. Mm-hmm. And it's because it's tense that you're adding more tension after, you know, during an orgasm. And that can yeah. make orgasm really uncomfortable and not, you know, not enjoyable at all. So,
right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to it. And the pelvic floor is so essential for all sexual function, bowel function you mentioned mm-hmm. as well, and of course, bladder.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
So what do you think should prompt someone to seek pelvic floor therapy?
Because you don't need a referral, right? Like necessarily.
Right. No, it's we have direct access for physical therapy in the state of Illinois. Many states offer that as well. Not all states. But yeah, you can, you know, show up at their door and request a visit. You know, the main things that could prompt you to consider it is one, if you feel like you just don't know what's happening down there, like, I don't know if I'm able to do Kegel. I don't know if I'm able to relax. My Pilates instructor keeps telling me to brace my core and draw my pelvic floor in and pick up a blueberry with my vagina. And I feel like that doesn't make sense to me and it's not happening. So, yeah. You know, you can be really preventative before you have any pain just by recognizing like, you know, I have no idea what's happening down there. So it can be educational that way.
I mean, I think that's why we include pelvic floor in our plans here for concierge medicine, because mm-hmm. we actually know that most people don't even realize that they probably either have pelvic floor dysfunction or are likely to develop it because mm-hmm. of some of the ways that they're, you know, presented.
Absolutely.
I would think every woman at some point should just do a pelvic floor evaluation, whether they have pain or not, just to understand their body and their anatomy. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I think I see women that come in sometimes that are, you know, postpartum and don't have any, you know, they're not having any symptoms or anything like that. But they recognize that, you know, people do that after, you know, having a baby and that there's a lot of stress on the area. So they just come in to see like what's going on down there. Mm-hmm. But you can do that at any point in your life and it can be really informative and it can improve the quality of your life by just having more awareness of not only your pelvic floor, but all the muscles surrounding that and day to day, preventing back pain, you know, things like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're someone that's been told they have TMJ, or that, you know, they need, what are those things called?
Night guards.
Yeah. Night guards. Yeah.
Yeah.
You won't believe how many people that come in for TMJ, I tell them, you know, I'm a pelvic floor PT. And they're like,
yeah,
you know, and they're like, how'd you know?
Right, exactly. Oh, gosh, you have TMJ. And it's usually anxiety too. I feel like, especially in midlife, especially teenage girls these days. I mean, it's just rampant. Anxiety is rampant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think probably social media plays into that sometimes.
For sure.
But, you know, also just because you're constantly like hyper aware of everything that's happening.
Just soaking in everything.
Yeah.
You know, in society.
So, mm-hmm. yeah. And so I think anyone that has any trace of anxiety should definitely see a pelvic floor PT. Mm-hmm. You don't even realize that, you know, you're not breathing right half the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Or want vaginal fitness.
Vaginal fitness, yeah. Vaginal fitness. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. course, there's the common, you know, the maybe more well-known reasons why if you're having urinary issues, bowel issues, you know, or as we mentioned, any sexual or pain concerns, you could see a pelvic floor PT. So sometimes I'll see people after they've tried everything else for back pain, and then you can their pain is reproduced by pushing on the muscle in the pelvic floor inside the, you know, the vagina or the rectum.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too. People that have back pain and hip problems always have pelvic floor dysfunction too, because they're usually compensating, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of research to support that too, the connection there.
So say someone is interested, curious about pelvic floor therapy, how would someone find like a qualified pelvic floor therapist? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, so there's, you know, the APTA, the American Association for, I'm messing that up, but the Physical Therapy Association, APTA, they have a list of pelvic providers. Herman and Wallace, which is, you know, those are the realms that you can go through to become a pelvic floor PT, either the APTA or Herman and Wallace, and they both offer different courses for pelvic floor. And they both have their directories. You know, there are Facebook groups that I think there's some support groups on pelvic floor dysfunction on Facebook that you can find a provider. You know, I've actually, you know, looked on Reddit and seen, you know, people will talk about their experiences with therapists and like who's the best PT in the country, things like that, pelvic PT.
So all over social media too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's awesome. And I think that it's so important for us to really pay attention to that. So I think everything you're saying is wonderful, Grace. And I feel like, you know, if you guys want to find Grace, you can find her in our office. So
Grace is fabulous. So if you're interested, you're in our area.
Yes.
I think she would be.
Yeah, I'd love to work with you.
Well, thanks again, Grace, for being out today. And Karen, thanks for co-hosting with me.
Of course, guys.
Karen, you have any closing thoughts about aesthetics? I liked what you said recently about, we'll have to talk more about this one day, but like when you were talking about melasma.
Oh, yes.
I like that TikTok you made recently.
Yeah. Because our hormones, our estrogen specifically, is correlated to our melanin production. And in perimenopause, things are kind of going up and down, up and down. And if your estrogen is not stable, that can cause your melanin production to be unstable, and that can lead to areas of hyperpigmentation. If you are a person that's prone to that, you should have something on board in your skincare routine that can help to prevent that. And then sometimes, even when we're on oral birth control, that can trigger melasma. So, yeah, I think that will be a good topic for another day.
But I just remember you did a TikTok on it recently. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
But you can find Karen here in my office as well, at our office, and then or on TikTok, Instagram.
Yep, TikTok, Instagram. I feel like I do a little more talking on
Instagram.
On TikTok than I do on Instagram.
Okay.
Maybe I'll mush them all together.
Well, it'll all be in the show notes, so you guys can refer to that. But you know, thanks for joining us again. Grace is just in the office next to us, but I couldn't figure out how to put us all on one screen. But we'll do a live one, later at some point when we have all of our cameras set up. But we're actually in the middle of our office day, so we have to get back to our patients.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks for joining us today, everyone. I'm Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Remember, I'm here to educate so you could advocate. Please join us next week for another episode of Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormone. And don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.